What's good, everybody? I'm Dion Reboan for the Wall Street Journal, and this is a special bonus episode of WSJ's Take on the Week, the show where we break down the most important things to watch in business and financial news. We cut through the noise to get you ready for what matters. This week, we're talking with Max Levchin, who leads buy now, pay later company, Affirm. Max is no rookie to the payments game. He was an original co-founder of PayPal, along with folks you may have heard of like Peter Thiel and Elon Musk. At Affirm, Max is looking to build a company that changes how shoppers pay for big ticket items and the way we all take on debt.
Obviously, when prices go up, people need credit to buy things and services. And so in general, as a provider of credit, we benefit from folks saying, I'm not really going to spend this thing with cash. I'm going to buy it over time.
Affirm has recently partnered with companies like Walmart and Amazon to offer buy now, pay later options. And Max says the company is now visible at 65% of all e-commerce checkouts. We spoke with Max about how Affirm is faring and whether a buy now, pay later business makes sense in a world where consumers have pushed their credit card balances up past the $1 trillion mark, or one where U.S. interest rates stay high. So I want to start with this question. Affirm stock has been on a wild ride since debuting as a public company in early 2021. How has that been for you as the CEO?
It's definitely better now than, let's say, a year ago. Not so much. Yeah. I mean, I try very hard not to look every day, and I'm generally successful at that. But I have a responsibility to people who trusted us at our IPO, people who bought our shares, you know, at whatever price. You know, over time, we are meant to deliver returns for them. And I'm not unaware of it, and I care about them. Perhaps to a greater extent, I care about Affirmers, people who actually work for the company, and everyone is a shareholder, and therefore stock price is effectively the majority of the compensation in most cases of what they have. And so when the stock price trends red, I feel less good about asking them to pull magic feats of software engineering and financial brilliance than I do when it trends green. And so I care about it through the lens of productivity, making sure that Affirmers are recognized for the really good hard work that they do, et cetera. And, you know, high beta doesn't faze me too much, but I've sort of been in the startup soup for a very long time.
You use that word high beta. Affirm stock rose 400% last year. That made it one of the best performing stocks in the U.S. And I think that was kind of against all odds, against all Wall Street expectations. Why did the stock perform so well last year?
So I think it was maybe one of the first times in our history as a public company when I was definitively able to say, do good work, get rewarded by the stock market over and over and over again. We entered 23 not in a great place. We had to do a reduction in force. We bit off quite a lot more than we could chew given the state of the U.S. economy and, you know, perhaps state of the Affirm productivity. And in, you know, just a little bit before this time last year, I stood in front of the company and said, I made a bunch of mistakes. I'm going to correct them, and we're all going to get through this together, and we're going to just focus on being a great company and delivering on every goal we have. And two things really surprised me to the good: how well and how quickly the company aligned on that simple message and just worked so hard and so well, and how quickly our results showed that this really is working. And then how quickly the stock market said, wait a second, these guys are not going to be left for dead. They are just firing on all pistons. And I think through the story of the Fed is raising rates and consumers are losing confidence and all the bad news, we would come out and print yet another great quarter, yet another really tight control on credit performance, which is what we had said we'd be able to do even through a, you know, less positive economic climate. And by the time we sort of got to our end of fiscal year, tail end of June, we showed up with an adjusted operating income positive, which I think vast majority of Wall Street a year prior said, yeah, they're not really going to get there. That's just not, you know, that's unrealistic.
Sorry if I could get you to step back and just define that. Talk to me for our listeners who aren't deep in the markets.
for us, adjusted operating income positive is basically making money modulo some of the capitalization and equity used for lending and stock-based compensation. So it's a operating income with a couple of adjustments that are quite customary, but it's a really good measure, at least it was all through 23, of how we're going towards being cash flow positive, which I'm sure all your listeners can understand.
Our listeners do like when companies are cash flow positive.
We're not there yet, but I think the most important milestone on the way to free cash flow was adjusted operating income positive.
I am going to ask you about that. I want to ask you, though, about this year, because the stock has been down by over 20% at some points from where it started the year. Why has there been this kind of reversal on the stock this year?
Hindsight is always much easier to develop and have really thoughtful explanations. So as I cast my eye over the wild and mostly positive ride of 23, I have all sorts of answers. What's happening right now in the market? It's always too hard to tell. I don't really know. My goal or my plan is to just continue printing better and better quarters. And my guess is that we'll continue seeing appreciation.
That was part one of our interview with Affirm CEO Max Levchin. Up next, I'll be talking with Max about inflation and some criticisms of the buy now, pay later model.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
I want to ask you about inflation. How has inflation affected Affirm? And I mean, given the strong performance of the stock in 2023, given the surprisingly strong results you guys showed in your earnings, is it fair to say inflation is good for business?
To an extent, yes, but there's a sort of deeper answer here. Obviously, when prices go up, people need credit to buy things and services. And so in general, as a provider of credit, we benefit from folks saying, I am not really going to spend this thing with cash. I'm going to buy it over time. And we are a credit card replacement. You know, we think we're a better provider of credit than credit cards. And so as we grow, inflation helps us grow a little bit quicker. The flip side of inflation, of course, is as the Fed moved the rates up to tamp it, we expected and are now starting to see a little bit of an increase in unemployment. Unemployment makes it harder to lend folks money because they don't necessarily have the salaries to pay them back. And so there's a sort of give and take relationship between inflation and sort of post-inflationary behaviors by the central bank. But generally speaking, demand for Affirm went up as the prices trickled up.
Well, that brings me to another question. Do you need the Fed to cut interest rates for Affirm to be successful? I mean, can Affirm continue to thrive if interest rates stay at 5.5%?
Absolutely. In fact, if I had a magic wand that connected directly to the minds of the Federal Reserve governors, I would wave it and say, be consistent. The most challenging time for us was when the Fed just kept on raising interest rates very, very quickly. The time it takes for the market, especially the capital markets, you know, we go to capital markets to borrow money or to sell our loans so we can continue funding our expansion. When the market had no idea when the rates would plateau was by far the hardest time. Now that it's very clear that this sort of 5 to 5.5 range is where they are no longer accelerating, maybe they'll cut, maybe they won't. That actually doesn't really matter for us all that much at all. The consistency of the rates allowed us to operate the business in a much more stable way, at least as far as the public markets are concerned. And so we are absolutely thriving in terms of today's rate environment. If it goes up a little bit, if it goes down a little bit, it will not make much difference for the company. You know, the sort of a wild ride was definitely no fun.
I also want to ask you, I mean, folks, I think who know the history know you as a co-founder of PayPal, and I'm sure you've been asked before how this has informed some of your decisions as CEO of Affirm, but I'm curious about how your experience with PayPal is guiding you through this moment at Affirm.
you know, there's some similarities and some fundamental differences. PayPal was built to democratize access to credit cards. We entered the scene in very late 90s. Internet economy was struggling. We were about to head into the fairly brief but very real downturn of 2000, 2001. And people were struggling to sell things online. And PayPal relied on existing credit card infrastructure and was not trying to mess with it whatsoever. We very much came in to mess with the credit cards. As an immigrant, as somebody who came to the US with almost no financial education, I personally ran into a bunch of, how do you use this thing? It seems so powerful, and yet it ruined my credit rating, you know, experience with a credit card in college. And so reflecting on that and the lessons from PayPal is what led me to, you know what, we can do better. We can build a better product than the credit card, and led me to start Affirm. And so in many ways, I feel that Affirm is a return to the industry to fix the things that we didn't fix with PayPal.
Interesting. I want to ask you about that, because right now we are seeing this historic increase in credit card debt and a big increase in credit card delinquency. I know you've said that that was a big part of why you wanted to start Affirm, but what do you think about the current state of credit card debt, and how are you thinking of that as CEO of Affirm?
So obviously, the credit ecosystem, usage of credit, is entirely connected. So it's not enough to say, well, we have a better mousetrap. Everybody just switch to Affirm. People use credit cards. People use other forms of credit. And so the entire thing is deeply interconnected. Obviously, it's not great that credit card balances are building up. It's definitely much more concerning that delinquencies are building up all around us. Ours have, you know, last quarter we printed yet another quarter where our delinquencies were flat year on year, quarter on quarter. We held to the numbers that we said we would. It's very important for us to continue showing the market that we are in control of the credit outcomes that we manage, but we're very mindful of what's happening in the overall ecosystem. The thing that probably worth saying out loud, credit, generally speaking, is good. America runs on credit. I borrowed money to go to college. I came here with, you know, $700 across a family of five, and all of that adds up to, if you don't borrow, it's hard to get ahead. So I'm a big fan of helping folks borrow. Mm. I think we led ourselves a little astray when we decided that credit cards is the optimal way of borrowing money. Revolving credit is really, really hard to calculate. Exponential functions are just hard to estimate in your head. Simple interest is much better. That's what Affirm does. I think late fees is a revenue center for credit cards and a center of extreme pain and annoyance, at least, and sometimes ruin for consumers. And so we don't charge late fees, never have, never will. And so on. There's many little gimmicks and tricks within the credit card world that we eliminated when we designed Affirm. That's why people choose us. We are a nicer, better product. And so access to credit can be done better than we'd done it before Affirm. But without access to credit, you're going to, you know, effectively live hand to mouth, and that's not good either. And so there's always a balance to strike between giving folks access to credit as much as, you know, is safe, and doing it in a way that doesn't harm their future financial lives.
That's really interesting that you say that, because what some of the critics have said is that Affirm actually makes some of these problems worse by giving folks who maybe can't afford to buy things access to capital to, you know, literally the service buy now and pay later, that you're kind of driving people into more debt. You're encouraging folks to spend, to rack up debt and bills that they can't afford to pay. What do you say to that?
I think that's a very superficial view, in a sense that if you said, well, you know what, credit cards are a given, you're going to spend X dollars every month on credit cards, that number is never going to go down, and now you have this new pocket of credit and it's called Affirm, well, gosh, you're now in more debt. That's certainly not our goal, and it's not the reality. Majority of our consumers are choosing between credit cards and Affirm, and when they choose Affirm, they are picking a safer product. I mean, credit cards should be appropriately titled buy now, pay forever. Once you start revolving, it's really, really hard to not revolve. You know, half of America revolves on thousands of dollars of debt. And
Max, we should say, when you're talking about revolving, you're talking about carrying a balance, as in not paying it all off.
Exactly. And if you look at the design of credit cards, it's designed to help you, quote unquote, revolve for as long as possible. Minimum monthly payment isn't designed to help you have the least financial burden. It's designed to make sure you don't pay it off too quickly, because the interest income for the credit card company would come down if you paid too fast. At Affirm, if you pay your loan early or prepaid, there are no penalties and the interest gets eliminated. In other words, we actually make it compelling for our borrowers to pay off Affirm transactions sooner.
Want to get smarter about investing? Then tune in to the Capital Ideas podcast from Capital Group, home of American Funds Distributors, Inc., one of the world's leading asset managers. Each week, we bring you stock market outlooks, macroeconomic updates, and investment strategies that can help you succeed. Learn from portfolio managers with decades of experience about how they navigate uncertain markets. Prepare to be engaged, enlightened, and entertained by listening to the Capital Ideas podcast today.
Thanks for sticking with us. Let's get back to our interview with Max Levchin, CEO of buy now, pay later company, Affirm. I guess what I'm trying to drill down to here, Max, is I think what some folks have said is, okay, the credit cards, they charge people a lot of interest, but they also have a pretty rigorous process for approving who can and who can't get a credit card. Whereas I feel like what people have said about Affirm, whether these be Wall Street analysts and others, have said, well, Affirm has a larger percentage of folks who have lower incomes, who have lower credit scores, and therefore it's a bit of a different profile in terms of the customer. Would you say that's accurate?
No, I actually would quibble with that on a variety of levels. So let me try to keep this tight just because there's so many things I disagree with. So first of all, we've served north of 40 million Americans. So we have a very large swath of the American population in our customer database. And we maintain a very high consumer satisfaction rate. So people actually like using the product and they repeat, et cetera. So part one. By definition, we are serving more than one segment. It's true that we help super prime borrowers. We help near prime borrowers, help plenty of prime. Majority of our consumers are what's called prime borrowers, et cetera. And single most important thing to understand about us is we have a far more rigorous process for credit underwriting than any credit card you'll ever meet. By definition, we re-underwrite or make a credit underwriting decision for every transaction we approve in the system. There's never a, well, we kind of know that you may have lost your job, but we're going to say yes to this swipe, which is exactly what happens with credit cards. The way folks get themselves in trouble with credit cards, the canonical story of, oh no, I'm in trouble now, begins like this. I have this really nice credit card. It gives me rewards and I'm going to swipe it a lot and I use it for everything, which is okay. But if calamity strikes and you lose your job, you still use the same credit card to pay for things that you need to get. If you don't regain that job quickly enough, you find yourself revolving or paying interest on a hefty amount of debt that you've swiped up. The credit card is designed to allow you to transact once you've been approved on and on and on. That's the whole construct of the revolving line of credit that underpins every credit card. Affirm works differently. Every time you say, I'm going to use Affirm to buy something, Affirm gets involved and we say, hey, we see through both traditional and non-traditional underwriting data that you are either able to afford this transaction or not. And if the answer is no, we don't approve this transaction. We try to be constructive and easy to understand when we explain why the answer is no. But if the answer is no, we don't think you're able to pay us back, you will hear a no. We will not approve a transaction where we have no belief that the customer has the funds to pay us back.
I think the other perception of Affirm is that customers can pay off these big purchases in installments with no interest. But some customers do pay interest, and some as high as 36%, I've seen from your literature. So what percentage of Affirm transactions do charge customers interest, and what percentage don't?
That number changes quite a lot. We have everything from pay in 30 days to pay in 36 months, and everything in between, many different terms. For each one of these terms, if the merchant is a high margin merchant, they want to compel you or the prospective buyer to say yes to a transaction. What they can do is say, I'll make it simple. Instead of paying for this right now and getting all the cash out of your pocket and getting the thing that you want, pay for it over time, but don't pay any interest. I will subsidize the interest for you. Whenever you see a 0% deal with any buy now, pay later player or Affirm, which is much more than that, it means that the merchant, and sometimes the manufacturer, but mostly the merchant, is subsidizing the interest payment. And so the number of merchants offering subsidized APR deals or 0% APR deals in our ecosystem changes kind of on a month-to-month basis as folks decide to turn on or turn off these promotions. But at any given time, that number is between 25 and 50% on a dollar basis.
So you'd say about 25 to 50% of transactions on a farm are ones where the customer will pay no interest.
At any given time. If I looked at the Q2 last fiscal quarter for us, I think it was 73% interest bearing and the rest was not.
Okay, so about 73% of customers paying interest. Got it. I want to ask you about just what Affirm is and making sure folks understand this idea of no late fees. As a consumer, that sounds great, but I can see why that might make an investor a little nervous. I've also heard you say that Affirm takes on the risk of customers or consumers not paying. So why is this something that investors should be excited about? There's a company that's taking on that risk and also not adding the potential of late fees or potentially very large interest payments that are sort of designed to compel consumers to pay.
Every payment company has a point of view on what's right and what's wrong. I don't judge. But in a practical reality of talking to hundreds of thousands of consumers over, you know, tens of thousands probably in personal experience and hundreds of thousands by just scanning through conversations we have with our borrowers, 12 years in, we're still a startup. We think it's really, really important to build a great relationship with our customers and build a brand. So that's why we don't charge late fees. And I think investors should be excited about a brand that doesn't just care about consumers, but creates a kind of loyalty where it makes people talk about when a company treats you like a firm does, you're willing to be the word of mouth source telling your friends, hey, if you're thinking about buying something, consider using a firm. And so that's worked really well for us.
But all that said, Affirm, as you mentioned, still not profitable by GAAP measures. So how does that translate, that brand loyalty, all those things you talked about, how does that translate to sustainably making a profit? What needs to happen and when do you expect that to happen?
So good news is, if you look at our unit economics, which is how much money we get to keep after every transaction is paid off, it's very healthy. We call it revenue less transaction cost, which is a fancy word for unit economics, how much money is left after all is said and done for every loan that we write, every transaction that we fund. That number has been quite steady between 3 and 4% for a very long time, and we continue to guide Wall Street towards that number. If you look at our hiring since, let's say, New Year's of 2023, we've basically kept the company about the same size, and we've been very, very careful and deliberate about growing headcount. It does not take a genius to see that. So long as we keep growing transactions, which you do by having a great brand, having great word of mouth, and you know, it doesn't hurt to have a growth rate. Last quarter, we posted, 33% year on year. So it's a very, very rapid clip compounding. We don't need to do very much more than to just keep our expenses flattish or grow them slower than overall volume to start printing cash flow. And we showed pretty extraordinary operating leverage increase all through fiscal 23 because as we kept headcount essentially flat and just grew transaction volume, productivity is just obviously blew up. And so I feel very good about our ability to get to cash flow. As a public company CEO, I'm not allowed to tell you here's the calendar dates that I have marked for when that's going to happen. But
that's what I was hoping for.
Unfortunately, I've been learned in the school of do not throw out random numbers you didn't guide the rest of the world to. But I do have very good feeling about our ability to print positive cash flow. And we're certainly headed in that direction for all the right reasons.
That was Affirm Chief Executive Officer Max Levchin. Thanks for listening to this bonus episode of WSJ's Take on the Week. Subscribe to WSJ's Take on the Week wherever you get your podcasts. For even more, head to WSJ.com. I'm Dion Reboan. Stay smart.